Kingston City Council, February 18th, 2025, 7 o'clock.
Mr. Hudson?
Here.
Mr. Cunningham?
Here.
Ms. White?
Here.
Ms. White, yes. And Knutson, I'm here. Are there any adjustments to the agenda?
None, Your Honor.
Perfect. Consent calendar. Has everybody had a chance to read the minutes for February 3rd? Are there any corrections or amendments? We have a motion. And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Rena? Okay. Comments from the audience. Anyone wishing to discuss items not covered on this agenda is welcome to address the City Council as a whole. Please state your name and address for the record. Each speaker will be given a maximum of 3 minutes. Speakers may not defame, intimidate, or use profanity or personal affronts. The Council reserves the right to delay action until they have full information on the issue. Does anybody want to come up to the podium and say anything?
Your Honor, I have a question. I'm not sure if the reason I'm here tonight is on the agenda. I actually haven't seen it yet. So I believe you guys were going to discuss cannabis tonight and cannabis placement.
Oh, you're
possibly. Is that on the agenda?
Your Honor, if I may,
yes,
there's some additional information, some rolling information that I planned on sharing as part of my department report.
Yes. So I'm not sure if this is the time for this.
No.
Okay. I'll wait. I'll sit down. Shut up.
No. You're good. Okay. Reports, boards, commissions, committees, and schools. Economic development by Mr. Wiggins.
Yeah, so we had the pleasure of meeting with William Wright, the owner of the Dairy Queen. He gave us some updates on what he's going to be doing. He's going to apply for an urban development grant for the city, make some phase changes to the Dairy Queen, which I think sounds very promising, and what he showed us looks very good.
Good. Yeah, I've seen that he's ripping it down, so.
Yeah, I think it's a facelift. Brian Krawitz from the partnership discussed the upcoming pitch night where businesses have an opportunity to put ideas out and win some money to buy themselves.
When is that going to be?
I couldn't tell you. I don't have it notated.
Okay.
I believe it.
March.
There you go.
Hmm?
March 8th.
March 8th. Thank you.
The 57 unit subdivision off of Johnson was approved.
Oh, good.
And
good.
Ryan Short will be the developer. We discussed some of the chamber news that we've been talking about here. Gave the economic team an update on that. The Wilson Shopping Center was purchased by a new owner.
Have we heard anything about what they're going to do or what they want to do?
Yeah, Your Honor, Council, members of the audience. So I've had a direct conversation with the new owner, and he's ready to move fairly quickly, as we had previously discussed. He's trying to take stock of the leasing situation there. He doesn't know if he's going to keep all of the leases, and I'm talking about the existing commercial operations that are occupying those units. He wants to put together what does the community need. He's going to come down and broker a meeting with us in short order. To just take stock of, anybody at the local levels, institutional knowledge on the commercial needs here. It's one of the things that we're trying to approach with Main Street and Chamber is getting a visionary plan that would show data on the commercial needs here. So that's what we know as of now, as of a week ago.
Is he a local or out of area buyer?
He is up north in and around the Portland area.
We'll find out when he shows up.
Yeah, sure. It'd be nice to know. You said how far north is he?
He's in and around the Portland area.
North.
Well, that could be Alaska.
Exactly.
You know.
Could be. All right, Mr. Wiggins, sorry.
And then lastly, we discussed business licenses. It says that we are currently charging $50 per year. Kim Todd had some feedback on that, discussing that maybe some of the other cities for doing higher fees Thomas had some feedback that there was other cities that weren't doing fees at all.
Really?
For a business license? Yes, Your Honor. It's a commercial registry just to know who's continuing to do business. It's prudent to have a fee because we do some diligence internally on those. Cindy works very hard on keeping a running list.
Well, it's been, $50 for 50 years.
Uh-huh.
So, right on. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Park Board, Dory.
It's quite a meeting. I have to tell you, we only had 3 members. Anyone interested in the audience? We need some more Park Board. I think there's just one more for sure.
Not sure.
Not the other person applied. But we need someone on there. Clay Caldwell, who, if you don't know, is the president of the Winston-Dillard-Yellen Festival. He was there, and they have an idea of planting a big Christmas tree, like, on the other side, as some of you don't know, the city owns part of the park out here, and the other part belongs to Dickerdorf? I'm not sure.
Dickerhoff.
Is that correct? And anyway, Clay's proposed that they acquire a tree, and then they want to place it possibly in the northwest corner. The water would be covered by the existing irrigation system, which already is there. And right now we pay half, and Dickerdorf pays the other half. So there's no problem there. And also, I'm not quite sure, the decorating, they're going to use a boom truck. I think that's one that comes up and down, so you can get into the tree and decorate it very nice. So we have some great ideas, and hopefully in the future they'll come to the general public meeting here and request it. There was a big discussion about the playground equipment, and I'm going to jump to that right now. And they had, Andy had Nancy Agnes. How do you pronounce that?
Agnes.
She's a consultant and certified playground safety inspector, and she had quite a bit to say. It was a full page of things that need to be done out there. And I'm not going to go over, but some of them are excessive cracking, peeling of the coating on the playground equipment, which is dangerous, and rust, missing barrier at the deck entrance of the overhead horizon bars, or ladders. And chain link fence is the only barrier from the parking lot, which is bad, because if someone comes around there, I shouldn't say teenagers in particular, but someone that's not watching what they're doing, they can hit the kids. We don't want that. She also suggested that the existing equipment does give rise to some of those safety measures that I just discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's hazardous to the children around there because they aren't protected well enough. And she wanted to do full removal, which Andy is looking into. The price is very healthy, so we need to get some grants. Anyone here know how to write grants? You're welcome. Contact Thomas. We need some. And he does have a list of them, too, if you're interested. Really would appreciate getting some if anyone knows of anyone. And Mark Cowan for the grant program coordinator, he's the one, if you want to look at the grants, I'm not going to go over all of them, but there's several of them that are available that need to be applied for. And let's see what else. River Bend, Jack Holland, he suggested that River Bend Live can apply for park project to place an ADA walkway around so people that are in wheelchairs or walkers or something can get down there easier than what they are instead of sliding down that hill. And that was a good idea. And also, Riverbend Live and WAID will be collaborating this year for the fireworks. So we'll have two things going on, which is great. We'll use that, and the people will like the fireworks. They'll also like what's going on in Riverbend Live. So that should be really great. And they did talk about putting flags up rest of the day, but it was raining a little bit. Not a very good idea. So that didn't get done. And I guess that's about it, unless you have something else to add.
No, you covered it, aren't you?
Andy, is there any way that this public works and do some of the repairs?
We're going to do everything we can, particularly with summer coming, Dave. You know, they talk about the double swing sets of different bays, some of the things we haven't really thought about. But you have the youngster with the swing sets can't be intermingled with the older kids' swing sets, for example. So things like that. So we've already ordered some of the appropriate type of swings to replace in all, you know, over a couple of playgrounds that we have. So we'll get those switched, taken care of, any of the protruding bolts, things like that. Those are underneath the deck, and it really, a lot of that stuff you don't really think about, but there are some protruding bolts. We've done that. We've done some touch-up stuff. We're working on getting some fall protection in there. One of the things she did bring up was probably in the near future that the slide that comes down, that will have to be removed here fairly quick. You can actually see the... you know, that plastic, when the sun hits it, it just gets brittle and breaking. The bolts are going to start poking through that plastic. The same thing we experienced up top years back when the old metal slide, when they started actually tearing children and causing issues. Then we of course, take the appropriate action for them.
So. This is, what, 15 years old?
Yeah.
At least.
20. Yeah. It's,
yeah. Oh, well, that's
been there.
Good.
It's been there a while. And it's, yeah. You know, like I said, we could have postponed maybe a little bit, and I'll just be honest, but some of the cuts, like in that plastic, some of that coating, it gets cut. If we would have got on it years ago, maybe prolonged it a bit, but when it gets to the fact where they start peeling, because now it's just, there's just so much.
Right.
There's not much you can do with it.
It's not lead paint.
Unfortunately.
So, I know that we'll probably touch base when the park will come back with some other things, but talking about fencing, I know that obviously, the fencing that's there now can't stop a car that comes there too fast. But what kind of a fence would they
put in? We had a boulders that were all great. There's big boulders in front of the fence.
Yeah, there's boulders. There you go. That's one option. And one of the things that we're kicking around is just strictly since it's a discussion point, because there was talk brought up on a splash pad, different things, right? So you hate to be just no. I mean, who likes to be told no? So it's always good to look at things, check things out. Invite out. Can we do it? Is it an option? I can't honestly say that right now. Right?
The state, the DOT has got some great big giant concrete borders that you can put up that
so
actually look pretty nice.
One of the things there in that particular area is one of the area difficulties we have is during events parking. Right?
Yeah.
And so if we're gonna be looking at this thing, this may be an opportunity to probably, you know, maybe shift this playground over and maybe relocate it where it's a little more safer out of the way, a little more user-friendly, provides more parking, a little safety, it covers several things. But that'd be part of the process as we go through it. So.
Right on. Good, thank you. Okay. Department reports, wastewater, Christopher, good to see you.
Yes, good to see you. So we start off with the flow allocation chart. There was a change last month to it, and I added that here. Leachate now goes to Ingram, the treated leachate. So the raw still comes to us, but the treated goes over there. Their plan is to have everything go over there, but the plant can't always keep up, so we still accept some of the raw. This allocation chart is mainly for billing purposes, so it's there to subtract from the creek's flow so they're not getting billed for it.
It's good to see it finally going over there.
So it's 9, 10, 12 trucks a day through the plant is difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's through the neighborhood, and that's just running one truck a day.
Mm-hmm.
So there's times where they run two or three 24/7. So.
Good.
We fared the cold weather pretty good. We had some breaks. A lot of the breaks were just due to old piping.
Yeah.
Rust that was there that we didn't know was there. We tried to do our freeze protection rounds, but when it gets that cold, you just can't protect.
For that long.
Yeah, for that long. So usually a day or two, no matter how cold it gets, we're usually okay. But
do you put heat tape around
them? Some of the stuff we have heat tape on. We have valves that we're able to turn off in the ground. A lot of stuff's plant water based, so we're just able to run the water. It's not really costing us anything. Try to keep it from freezing. But as the pressures in the plant go up and down, sometimes things will plug off, and that's where we get ice happens. And then we come in, and things are frozen. About 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon when they thaw out, that's when you can see all the.
All the stuff go down the roof?
Yeah. That's all I have for January.
Right on. Thank you. And you have upcoming water plant projects?
Yeah. And this is more to touch on kind of current state of a couple of the buildings and some of the infrastructure out there.
Uh-huh.
The plant was originally built in 78, 79, so that stuff's old. The phase one update was done in 99, so we're 26 years old on that stuff. And phase two is 2012, so it's 13 years old. So that first picture, the last one, was the belt. So that we use for a thickening process in our digester. It gets used 2 to 3 times a week. The company that built that sold, and we can't get parts for it anymore. So parts for it come from eBay. We'll make parts. Sometimes we're able to change parts out for a different manufacturer, but it's just one piece of the puzzle. Another part of it is on the last one.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. We get a buildup of struvite that comes from the digester. It's kind of a calcium mineral-like. There's really no way to get rid of it besides chiseling it away. And so we can, but you can't get rid of it all. And that struvite is built up on that belt quite heavily.
Here's a laser.
So is this just a rubber belt that?
It's a like a perforated belt.
Yeah.
So we add a chemical to it that the solids coagulate together, and then the water goes out, and then we pump the solids back to the digester. So next.
Go ahead. Next one.
Oh, now we get to look at that other one, sorry.
Yep. That whole digester building has hydrogen sulfide that gets in there. It's a really small portion that the digester creates, only about 1%. However, it is very deadly and corrosive. So that is on the one of the main roll-up doors. And the rust just gets so bad that you can't get ahead of it. And that's where a lot of the stuff is happening in that building. It's easy to go in there and visually see the bad, but part of the question we have is what's behind everything that you can't see. So that's why we're working with getting together with Corello, engineering firm for the plant, to have them come out and do kind of an extensive overhaul of the building itself.
So are they just going to clean it, or are they just going to rebuild it? Or
That's the question, is to look into the, because it's a block building, so look into the structural integrity of the building, look into, like I said, what's behind the walls, what's in the electrical buckets, kind of dive in there and see at what level.
Does it eat the concrete?
It does, yep. Most of the concrete is in good shape. In the building itself, the concrete structure on the dome, coating on it has failed, so it needs redone.
Now, but what is that?
That's the bottom part of the door.
Of the door?
Yep.
So if you've got that much degradation on the bottom, you probably got a pretty good probability that it's degraded significantly beyond that.
Yeah,
weakened
in other places.
Yeah. So therefore, you're probably looking at a replacement of the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing, you've got to look what's underneath it. It's like that, it's going to be bad underneath.
Right. So next. Electrical components in there. There's a lot of stuff that we can see visually like this. Need replaced. Like I said, the question is what everything that you can't see. Next. All the copper piping in the building, the hydrogen sulfide has really eaten it up. A lot of these copper pipes are for water seal lines, for pumps. They go directly into the concrete, and that's where they like to rot away.
Yeah.
So then we're left with cutting and chiseling away the concrete to get to good copper to make a repair.
So is copper the best?
Not in this situation.
Well, no. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Stainless would be.
So are you going to replace it with stainless?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. That would be a part of that study,
okay.
Though, too. Next. There's several louvers on the building. They open and close based on exhaust fans,
yeah.
And they don't open and close. So none of the actuators work.
None at all. They don't open at all.
They work because we've pried them open.
Yeah.
But some of them have failed because the electrical has failed to them. Some of them have failed just because rust. Some of the actuators failed. So they're all propped open. For most of the time, that's not an issue. Cold weather, it is an issue,
mm-hmm.
So we have to go back through and manually close them to keep the cold air out. Next.
Oh.
That is a, it's hard to tell in the picture, that's a piece of conduit, or that was a piece of conduit that came out of the ground, that came out of the concrete. Those are wires. They're not bare. There's still insulation around the wires. But the conduit in that location just completely disintegrated.
There's wires inside that?
Yeah, they're right in the center of that black kind of muck.
Yeah.
So, they're
yeah.
The wires. So this is just like a tar mastic that we placed around there to keep water and gas out of that conduit. Because the conduit leads back to electrical panels, so we're trying to keep as much as we can out of there.
Right.
I will say a lot of this happened quick. There was, I think everything just got to a certain point where it had all been susceptible to this environment for so many years,
mm-hmm.
And it all kind of failed at the same time.
Wow.
Next. So this is common. We will randomly come in, go to flip a light switch on, they don't work, you pull the switch out, and you find just wires that are gone. They're just disintegrated. And so, luckily, as you can tell in the picture, there's a lot of extra wire in there, so we're able to pull back, find new wire, and reattach it to get it to work.
Do they put excess wire in there for that, in case, just for that?
I don't believe so, but I can't say for certain. This, too, a lot of the, any metal box, like single gang box or
yeah.
Double gang boxes, they're rotted away. So there's really nothing to attach.
No.
Next. So that kind of, I mean, that was a really brief overview of the digester building itself. That's not even addressing the digester dome.
This is the one that smells bad.
This is the good one.
Well, if you like chlorine, yeah.
Oh, yeah, if you like chlorine. Well, it's fresh.
Yeah, it looks true.
So we're very fortunate at the facility where we create our own chlorine. It's a little bit more cost up front, however, it's much safer to work with. We produce a 0.8% solution. Bulk is like a 12-13%. You get burns from it. This, the worst you get is bleach clothes. So when we do have leaks, which we have lots of leaks, it's not too hazardous to work with.
Good.
Yep. So, because of all the leaks and just because of the environment, you can see the cracks in the concrete. This has been coated several times. It got coated probably like 8 years ago. And the coatings failed on it and exposed the concrete again. Next. Chemical pumps for chemical addition for the chlorine. Those are original from 99, so that company is no longer in business. Well, they are, but they've sold, and of course, they no longer make that pump. We're fortunate where we have pretty hefty spare parts.
Do they call you and tell you that they're going out of business?
No.
They don't?
No.
So, that's too bad. Because if they knew, you could buy a whole bunch of parts.
Yeah. Our actuators for our effluent filters were installed in 2012. In 2014, they discontinued that actuator.
Perfect.
Yes. They were all brand new. We couldn't get parts for them anymore. However, they made a retrofit kit that you could install these that were garbage. We tried one, and it didn't work. So we're going through every so often and replacing four actuators at a time. And then we have four actuators for spare parts, we're looking at, this is going to be next year, replacing these pumps, replacing that concrete pedestal, all the piping down there is all Schedule 80 that's been pieced together for the last 20-something years, and it's brittle and needs to replace. Next. Our chlorine storage tanks. We have 400 or 500 gallon tanks, and they all leak. We've tried several different options. We've had these welded bungs put on there. They end up leaking. We need new tanks, and we need to have better expansion joints on the new tanks. So,
how often do they? Does the repair last?
This Amazon epoxy's lasted really, really good. It's been 2 or 3 months. So, we've also tried plastic welding on them. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. So it kind of depends on. You normally don't see. A crack will develop and then the crack will go off in different directions and it's hard to tell where the crack goes. So, this schmoo that we put on there has been the best so far. So, that's what we're looking at doing next year. Next. This is another picture of that concrete pedestal that those tanks sit on. Oh, another crack. Next. The blowers, so the chlorine generation systems, part of the byproduct is hydrogen. So there's blowers there to keep air going through there to prevent that from happening. Luckily, our systems are small enough that these are really an overkill. There's enough just passive ventilation there that it vents to atmosphere. These aren't really needed, but they're just added safety.
Do they work?
They do. You can, in this area, stick your finger through it.
Yeah. Not that you would want to.
No. Yeah. You could. Some days you want to, but...
Please.
No.
Hands clear. Keep hands clear.
One actually in particular has had a bearing whine for the last 15 years. And we have a replacement motor. But at this point, there's no sense in putting the motor on there because I don't think we would get it back together because there's so much rust. So.
Okay.
Yeah. And then another item today that we discovered was we have a gas regulator for our digester gas system. We were having problems with it in the cold, so we looked at it. It had taken on water, which it shouldn't, and that was freezing. We can't get parts for it. I know that's a common thing. That, though, we can't get parts for because the company sold, another common thing, and they don't have records of what the specific part, so they don't feel comfortable selling us because regulators are safety devices, is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what this is. So they won't sell us.
And nobody has the specs for it. Nobody kept any of that.
No. It has an SP on the label, which means it's special.
Oh, good.
And so that's why they won't sell us a new diaphragm for it.
Okay.
So also, you can't buy just a new regulator. You have to buy a regulator and a flame arrestor as one. One very nice stainless steel aluminum package. So
so it's going to be more than the $200,000.
Well, that's getting purchased immediately because it's a safety.
Okay.
It's part of the whole safety system for the digester itself. So right now we're, yeah.
Now you said the bones in the digester building is pretty good.
From what we've seen. Yep.
Okay, the part that I'm very concerned about is what you showed about the electrical,
mm-hmm.
because that's a disaster waiting to happen.
Right.
And so is there any interim steps that you can do to replace the wiring or do anything like that?
Call the electrician.
Yeah, we are on the docket for next budget year. Just as a maintenance item, we're going to have an electrician come out to the plant and they go over the entire plant from one end to the other. They spend a week or two, and they touch every single wire, every single connection. They tighten lugs. They make sure that everything's tight. They will loosen up over time. Now, specifically with that building, they're probably going to find a lot of issues. Not all of them are fixable.
The other thing I'm concerned about, too, is those chlorine tanks, because if you bring a leak on a chlorine tank, the outcome is not good. It could be
right.
devastating.
Well, and they don't leak to, they leak back to the plant. So, which we use in our process.
Okay.
And it is, being that it is a only 20% solution, so that 12 or 13%, it's not as bad. It's not a hazard per se.
Yeah.
So,
good.
The building itself is in pretty good shape. What about the piping that's in the concrete, though? If you have to, you're going to have to dig up some of that.
Some of it's going to have to be dug up or abandoned and rerouted over there on walls or.
With stainless steel.
Mayor, if I may, this is why this is being brought to your attention in February, prior to July 1st, prior to we even start any kind of budget conversations. Because we go into these budget committee meetings and we put in these high ticket items, and so you can see there's a pretty good visual aid of the deficiencies there, and they're significant, and it's not necessarily going to be cheap. I mean, the chlorine buildings is just, and this is just a wild guess, is $200,000, shouldn't exceed that, but the digester building is that's the jury is out on that. So Chris is going to be working with professionals to produce viable pricing on that, but that's something that you can anticipate. Appreciate Chris and his work. He went around and clicked some pictures for us so we could put something together for you so you had a good visual aid of the situation out there. I know a couple of you went out to the plant, but this makes it kind of real. And
I didn't see any of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going away. It's a problem that has to be addressed. So as part of plant operations, those are going to be a two capital items that will be put into next year's budget, just so you can anticipate that.
Okay.
And also, too, along that line, when you say $250,000, is that $250,000 for the city, or is that splitting between us and Green District?
No. The $200,000 is the total capital amount for the project, so it would be split between the two.
So it would be $100,000 for us, then?
Okay. If it comes to that much for the chlorine storage building repairs.
When's the engineer supposed to go out there, Chris?
Yeah. Corello has been with the plant. We've been with Corello since the mid-90s. They're kind of going through some staffing growing pains right now. We've lost some people.
Sure.
And so we're just trying to figure out who that new person is going to be.
Okay. I think we talked about that a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. They have some really good process analysis people there to help with problems like we have with the digester. It's just these project managers, they're lacking right now.
Okay. What's the turnaround on that usually? If somebody, engineer goes out there, how long until you get the results back?
Don't know.
Okay.
Cool.
other questions? Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you. Okay, so now we're going to have administration, Mr. McIntosh.
Thank you, Mayor, members of council. Good evening, members of the audience. A couple real quick items for you. I spoke to the engineer that's been working on and assisting the city on the overhaul of the council chambers and our police evidence room. The bid package for the city hall overhaul will be together probably by mid-March, so we can go out to bid on that. It's not as much, it's not in the higher up echelon of cost, so we should be able to work congruently with some contractors in the local area here, give them a winter job to work on to turn over this room. The evidence room will probably, the bid package and the engineering on that, seen more and let us know that that'll probably be the beginning of April. Prior to it being bidded out, that's $180,000, so that'll have to go through, we'll have to get three bids, the full meal deal on that. But the PD and myself will meet with the engineer to make sure that we're, kind of on the same page and everything's factored into that that we'd like to see.
So the evidence room hasn't gone out for bid yet?
No. No, just a couple of weeks ago, we got full ratification from all of the taxing districts. So that took a little bit of time. We got, which is a requirement prior to going out to bid and before the engineer gets too deep into concocting his plans. But he's pretty far along in it, and so we're expecting it the 1st of April. The second item I had was the as a follow-up of the community goal-setting session, which took place this last Saturday at 11 a.m., lasted about an hour and a half. It was an okay turnout. Was considered by all parties to be a success and foster productivity. We should have the goal document completed to you and in your email back prior to the end of the week. We've got a template we made out. There's about 12 goals, to my knowledge, that we logged in that were relevant for the city. If the council later in, at the latter end of this fiscal year, so I'd say May, want to do your own isolated goals linked to this next budget year, you can certainly do that. A lot of councils do that. They have a community goal setting session, and then you have your own individual standalone council goals.
Good idea. It is. It's a good idea. I know that I've had a couple calls wanting to know when the next one is. It's like, we don't know yet. But, it was such a good turnout, and it was so positive that, have a follow-up later just to see how everything's going, seeing if there's anything we can touch up on.
Certainly. That's something you can consider at a later, closer to the next fiscal year if you'd like to do that. And we have a little better idea on what some of the monies are that are going to go into the next fiscal year, because some of your goals are probably going to be attached to funding packages.
Yes.
So something to consider. And the last thing, and I believe, Mr. Thies, this is why you're here, we have some concluding information on our research on dispensaries. It's been just kind of a rolling topic we've wanted to share with you in the past couple, three meetings. We've talked about several things. We've talked about revenues that it might bring in. We've talked about what kind of detriment or the impacts it might have on the city. What we haven't talked about is the functionality of how it would work if it were in place. So we did some research on that. The League of Oregon Cities actually has a handbook.
And
dispensary, very helpful as always. Gives kind of a criteria and overview based on what the statute says and how the laws have prevailed in that regard. Mostly having to do, if you put it into place, what do the buffers look like? How do you protect your schools and your daycares and your churches and those types of things? Red Bar Cannabis did submit to the city a 11-page report that turned over quite a bit of information. We appreciate that. That I'm happy to release to the council in short order. I have this saved. I can send this out to you if you want to see some of this information. But he put together some what some other cities are doing. I think there's probably more than 10 here in terms of their programs that works for their cities. I do want to share this with you because this came up. The November 2020 ballot, right? We've talked about this a little bit. The ballot had two measures on it. Do you want to allow recreational marijuana? And do you want to tax it at a 3% local rate? Okay, so the vote for allowing it was 45.55% no and 54.45%, or excuse me, the other way around. 45% yes, 54 no. That's a separation of 249 votes. So not a whole lot of a spread there. The ballot results for the tax, which means public, do you want the revenue, was 64% yes and 35% no. That's an 807 vote difference, an overwhelming separation. That's where it stands as it is. In regards to how the program would look in the community, you want to put that. I made a map out for you. This is why we're overhauling the council chamber. So our electronic equipment works better.
It's online and it's on the desktop, but I can't get it.
We had this problem last time. What the map shows, my apologies, is we did buffers on the schools, the daycares, and the churches. The minimum buffer requirement for schools is 1,000 feet. You don't really have to do anything else. But 1,000 feet. Other cities do more. Other cities, when we did our marijuana task force back in 2020, there were increased buffers way far beyond that, which essentially precluded the entirety of Winston. If you do the minimum buffers, then it actually opens up the majority or three-fourths of the commercial district in the northeast area. So I'm talking northeast Maine. That whole area is opened up to you. The eastern side of Maine, as it transitions into southeast Maine, down there, I'll send this map out. I apologize. It's, for some reason, not coming up. So, essentially, there's commercial area available. There is, in an ample regard. The whole western side of the city is cut off because there's not much commercial area over there, but the schools prohibit you know, any viable area that you might look at. So, for example, the only commercial area that we have is on the western side of the high school. Well, the school being there and 1,000 feet eliminates those two commercial properties. So the main strip, there's area available. One thing, too, just to close the loop on this, is what a lot of cities are doing is they are placing a buffer in between dispensaries as to not allow the permittance to happen. And then we get inundated with dispensaries. And I believe Todd will talk a little bit about some of the legislation coming down on the state starting to limit the amount of license that they're going to offer through the Oregon Liquor Commission Control.
Didn't we get some things stating that we, at least I thought, we could only, if we put all the, I'll call them stickers in place, that there was probably only room for one store in town if they did.
Thank you for that question. When our marijuana task force was put together, the conversation was around increased buffers beyond the minimum. So instead of 1,000, it was like 1,500 or 2,000. So when you have bigger buffers, it eliminates all of the city except for a couple smidgen areas. If you do what's the minimum, which is 1,000, and we protect, do like a 200-foot buffer around, like, let's say, churches or daycares, then you actually have quite a bit of commercial area available for operations of this nature. So it was all about the size of the buffers at that time. And doing.
Didn't they have ordinances put into about the buffers back in, like, 2010?
So 2016 is when this started, bro. And Todd, please, if you want to contribute to this conversation, I'm sure the council would like to hear some of your thoughts on it. 2016 is when Measure 91 was introduced and when it was passed.
Was
and
it
that's
2016?
When.
But didn't we talk about it before then? Was it?
That's the information I have. Just wanted to impart that to you, and I'll have a just kind of a concluding thought after.
And you'll send that out to all of them?
Yes.
Cool.
Hi.
Hi.
Love to chat with y'all for a moment.
There you go.
You'll allow me to. My name is Roland Todd Deese. Born and raised in Myrtle Creek, Oregon. I have some packages here if it's okay to approach you guys and maybe you just pass me out. I think I have enough for everybody. A lot of that information in there is going to be duplicate of what Thomas is going to send you. But there is a little bit, you know, I took it, reworked it. I didn't even, wasn't 100% sure that Thomas received that data that I sent him. And I'm not going to, I realize I'm under a time constraint. I'm not going to read all that package, but I will go over kind of my cover letter here, and maybe it'll spur some questions or whatnot. So, good evening, Mayor, Council, City Admin. Thank you guys for allowing me to speak for a moment. Obviously, y'all know here that I'm here to speak about the cannabis industry and how it's evolved quite a bit since the last few times I spoke in front of you. The market has both matured and declined at the same time. In the beginning stages of the industry, retail licenses were handed out in abundance. The state believed that the cities would be setting buffers that would limit the demand for licenses. That was not the case. Saturation complaints began pouring in from citizens and business owners throughout the state. There were rumors of black market dealings coupled with an industry crippled by tax delinquencies. Bear with me for a moment. This is just a partial list from 23 and 24. To the tune of $28,434,000 in state and federal tax delinquencies. Now, mind you, this does not include the direct 3% that you guys would receive. That's not even on here. So this number probably jumped by several million if I had that data available to me.
So that's the money that was not paid?
Not paid.
Well, so what happens to them?
One of the things, I'm going to go along with 3 minutes.
Okay.
One of the things that, and I'll get into some of the legislation that has came about in the last year here, is that because of some certain players out there, I'm not going to name names here, but we now, every time we renew a license, we have to prove that we're in good tax stature with the state, at least. And chances are, if you're in a bad stature with the state, you're in a bad stature with the Fed, and da-da-da-da-da, and probably the county or local community that you may be operating in. Okay. So each and every time, I forget the acronym for it, we have to provide a stickament, Oregon Department of Revenue, to OLCC for each one of our licenses, that we're in good standing with them. And we have to renew those licenses every year and pay $5,000 per license to renew it. Just so you're aware. So Red Barn has 13 of them, just so you know. So 13 times a year I get blessed with that. So totaling over $28 million. As a result of these complaints, the Oregon State Legislature, along with OLCC, stepped in and passed House Bill 4121 with huge bipartisan support, I might add, and industry support. We're talking Republicans, we're talking independents, we're talking Democrats, we're talking the industry, the whole, everybody supported this. We needed help. We're trying to self-govern. The key component of this bill is that it eliminates OLCC from issuing any new licenses until there is not more than one active license per 7,500, 21-year and older residents in the state of Oregon, per dispensary. So right now,
in the state or in the city?
And it's a statewide guideline. It's a statewide guideline. But I might add to that, right now there's one dispensary for every 5,500 residents in the state. And we're not talking 21 year and older, we're talking 5,500 residents. Way too many. So if this law had been implemented from the beginning, the number of dispensaries we'd have in the state today would be 323, but instead we currently have 796.
The number of residents in the city of Winston that are 21 years of age and older is approximately 4,315. And that number skewed a little bit. I could only find data for 20 and up. I couldn't find 21 and up, so I just went with the 20 and up. So using HB 4121 as a guideline, it would not be a benefit to the city of Winston or incoming businesses to create zoning ordinances that would open the door to multiple dispensaries. In fact, the city's adult population is only 57% of the way to meeting the state guidelines for one.
Yeah.
This community will support one. But you get two of them, you're going to get... More than likely, one of them is going to be nefarious, da da da. I can go on and on. Important to note, cities have come to realize that more dispensaries do not equate to an increase in tax revenue. The OLCC recognized this for liquor licenses and have only issued about 282 liquor licenses statewide. That'd be liquor stores, right, not bars and such. But the city still receives substantial tax revenue. It's worth noting that dispensary licenses, it's worth noting the 282 store liquor license issued by the state is very close to HB 4121's desired number for dispensary licenses at 323. The state realized that too many dispos, short for dispensaries, serving a limited adult population does not equate to a better industry or more revenue. And I want to emphasize that, better industry or more revenue. I put a footnote here that 2024 liquor sales in the state of Oregon, mind you, only 282 liquor stores, was $964 million. Cannabis sales in 24 was 796 dispensaries, was $959,
$993 million.
It's not a big difference. So let's just say, call that 960. Yeah. So... With 282 liquor stores, they sold $4 million more worth of alcohol than 800 dispensaries sold.
In the whole state.
Yeah, in the whole entire state. This is why there's problems in the industry. The state allowed too many. The state gives cities the authority to place buffers as they see fit. A few examples of buffers that have been implemented by the cities are... As Thomas mentioned, there are park buffers, preschool buffers, church buffers, public property buffers, Head Start buffers, 2,000 feet between dispensary buffers, and others. In fact, towns like Detroit Lake, Molalla, they've implemented ordinance that limit retail dispensaries. Lakeside is another one. Says you can only be in this section of town right here. Detroit Lake limited a 700 foot stretch of commercial property and put in a dispensary buffer. There's no way you're getting more than one dispensary in that town. Many cities have learned the hard way that you can have multiple dispensaries who are not making money, resulting in them not paying state or local tax. More than likely, they're doing some nefarious stuff, selling out the back door. You've all read the articles. There's some bad characters out there. Or you can choose a dispensary by application that you feel would contribute to and serve the needs of your community best. Recently, a pretty close city manager to the city of Winston, from a community that I do business in, informed me that their city had to start legal proceedings in order to get the only other operating dispensary to pay their local tax. So they came in after us. Basically, we quit making money because they took a little bit of our market share. And then they didn't pay the city the taxes. So the city had to go after them legally in order to get them to pay. You probably can guess the name of what that dispensary might be with a little bit of
just
thinking.
A little, yeah.
If the city desired to have only one dispensary, they could do so through zoning ordinances, buffers, as well as adding an ordinance that limited the number of dispensaries allowed until the 21 and over population of the city reached a certain threshold similar to HB 4121. I've handed you guys some packets. There's a cover letter there that's a little bit different from the one I just read. There's also some additional language about House Bill 4121. And again, I want to reiterate that House Bill 4121 had huge bipartisan support, no matter what side of the aisle you're on. It also had the support of OLCC. It had the backing of the industry, including the Cannabis Industry Alliance Organization, which is the organization that's looking out for the good of the whole industry. So again, we're trying to self-govern. We're trying to self-govern. We're out there, actually, I've been to the state capitol lobbying for tougher, stricter laws with, you know, 10 or 15 of my other peers on lobbying day. There's also data included in that package about the liquor licenses versus the retail dispensary licenses and numerous buffer zone examples, such as Thomas is also going to share with you. So,
thank you, Todd. Our buffer map did finally come up with the help of Councillor Wiggins. And if I get more on that, sorry. So, just to kind of piggyback off what Todd is explaining in terms of the buffers, we place buffers around the schools of 1,000 feet. We also place buffers around certain other protected organizations, such as churches and daycares, of 200 feet. And this red zoning here is general commercial, which is typically the conventional zoning where you would allow an operation like this. So if we scroll into our main thoroughfare, which is where a lot of our commercial operations are housed, you know, you're going to get McGovern School, which cuts this area off completely. And you're going to get, you know, like City Hall here or something to that effect that cuts that off. But you'll notice, and then if you go down here, you know, of course, there's Riverbend Park, there's the middle school. But you'll notice you got a fair amount of area here that would allow, and up here that would allow that, an operation of, or an establishment of this capacity to, you know, have a propensity of coming in and setting up and not conflicting or encroaching in those buffer areas. It is of a sufficient distance. Now, this does not include introducing buffers of 1,000 feet or 1,200 feet in between dispensaries, because it's an unknown variable. You would have to take that in a case-by-case basis when they apply for a conditional use permit or a site review for a recreational marijuana dispensary. We would then set that 1,000-foot buffer around that property, and it would limit or eliminate 1,000 feet around that property. So inherently, you're going to deal with more eliminations in the future once you see one potential dispensary, wherever that might be, that's available here.
With this new law that they're putting in, we're only big enough for one, period.
You're right.
We're only big enough for one. So although we have lots of buffers and lots of areas that we can't, we still have area that we can. And what kind, I know you guys do a lot within your community, Todd.
Yes.
You know, it's not just a one-way ticket. It's a give and take. And you guys do a lot for your community. Can you tell them some of that?
We do. We take, I promised Mom and Dad that we would do the right thing, which we always have tried to.
I'm looking for the paper, but anyway, since, just as an FYI,
since I left real estate, because I couldn't afford to donate that much then, that's my donation list since 2017. I think it's a partial list, but it's pretty much mostly in the county to the tune of $93,000 we donated. And we take great pride in that. I'm not trying to brag. It's just a commitment we pledge to make to each and every city that or community that we work within. As a for instance, Myrtle. As a for instance, a good example, in my opinion, is Myrtle Point. Every community or county has to vote in whether or not they want to receive cannabis revenue, tax revenue. You guys did that in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, that's a state law. I don't quite get it, but you have to vote that in by public vote at a general election. Myrtle Point, when they decided to allow dispensaries, had not done that yet. And we were a couple of years out from a general election. But I pledged to them that I would donate 3% to them per month from the outset, from the first morsel of cannabis that we sold. And with great pride, when I showed up at about day 45 and handed him a check for the first 30 days, the city administrator over there, Darren, I'm sure some of you know, he said, "Oh, you were serious?" And so anyway, we continued to make those donations for 2 years to them regardless. And we, again, I'm not trying to brag, we just take great, my brother and I, the owner of Barn, we're from Douglas County, we're born and raised in Myrtle Creek. We take great pride in helping our local community. So, we're excited about that. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
If there was Red Barn, right?
Yes, sir.
About how many square feet are you talking about in the building?
Approximately 2,000.
About 2,000. And you, in that 2,000 square feet, you'd have to have certain, shall we say, security precautions for storage, et cetera, et cetera.
Most definitely.
State required.
And, yeah. And so our businesses that we have up here as it stands now, you'd almost have to tear down and make a building. Is that correct?
I went ahead and several years ago now, I think 5 years ago or 6 years ago, we went ahead and purchased the building here.
Oh, you did?
Just in case someday, and we, my maintenance person attends to that building bi-weekly, I think, and so we keep it mowed. And if parking lot blown, it's one of the favorite places for Mr. Sardi's officers to sit. It's the old Douglas Bank.
Oh, okay.
Up there, so.
Because it has a vault.
Mm-hmm. It does have a vault.
Used okay. to be a pharmacy.
It also has, it also has drive center.
Mm-hmm. Drive-through.
It also has drive-through capabilities, which is the up-and-coming thing in the state. I can ramble about drive-throughs for a second if you'd like me to. So at the start of COVID, when they deemed dispensaries as essential, then they gave us some tools. The governor gave us some tools at that time to be able to continue to operate safely. And, you know, some people weren't comfortable going into public places, etc. One of those was referred to as curbside, which means somebody can pre-order product. We can walk up to 150 feet from our front door, get their ID. We can't walk out with product initially, but we get their ID, say, okay, your ID looks good, but we're going to take it inside with us. Give us your 20 or 30 or 40 bucks, whatever the case may be. We go in, make change, check their ID, grab the product that they had pre-ordered, take it back out and give it to them. So that was one tool. Another tool was walk-up windows. They gave us the ability to have a walk-up window. Again, it has to be pre-ordered. You can't just walk up there and look at a menu and order. You have to call it in via phone or do it online for whatever reason that may be. I'm not sure that's a state law. And thirdly, the last tool that they gave us was drive-throughs, drive-up capability, and they govern those basically just like they would a walk-up window. You have to phone ahead or pre-order. And then you can pull up and the bell dings or whatever, and a staff member goes over, checks ID, makes sure that this is a tough subject for everybody, but I'll just bring it up. If there are any children in the car, we have to ask them, are you a legal guardian? If they, you know, I'm not going to say somebody's not going to lie to us, that could happen. But we ask them, are you a parent? They say no. Are you a legal guardian? If they say yes, we can finish the transaction. If they say no, this is my friend's kids or whatever, I'm sorry, you're going to have to do this transaction a different way, you know, sort of thing, but move along, please. So anyway, we do have the ability to do drive-ups now, and again, that is the next kind of up-and-coming thing. And it's, I believe, drive-throughs for the elders, people who are under the weather, I-5 travelers, are a big thing. And Roseburg has not allowed them yet. They're allowing something kind of similar. I'm currently in talks with them. But Coquille allows them. There's a handful of cities that are starting to roll it out and allow it.
Mayor, if I may, in concert with your question, one of the things that would be recommended if operations like this were allowed would be a permitting package that would, it's called a conditional use permit. Conditional use permits have to go through Planning Commission, they have to be approved, and there's certain criteria around it. Number one, compatibility with adjacent property uses and zoning districts. And a conditional use permit allows you to put any safety provisions as conditions that you think is necessary as a city jurisdiction. So site obscuring fencing, security type features, those things that we feel like would protect the integrity of the area. So in conjunction with your question, the permitting package would require any kind of, and this doesn't go towards you, Red Barn, is in as much as it does anybody, we're trying to flesh out if the program is going to be viable just on its face, you know, rather than, you know, looking at any individual entrepreneur in that regard. But the safety features would go along with a conditional use permit that would be housed within the general commercial zone, is how the same as the buffer zones and all of those provisions that would be written into conditionally permitted uses in the general commercial zone. That makes
would
sense.
Would adjacent property owners have a say in this?
They could come. They get notified within 150 feet. They get notified, and they could come to the public hearing and voice their, become a qualified party and voice their concerns in opposition or in favor, or neutral.
Do it also.
Yes.
Right. Anybody can.
I might. Thank you, Mayor. I might add, Councilor Cunningham, that just because you may not be aware. So inside a dispensary, every square inch, except for the restroom, of course, needs to be covered by camera footage. We store that camera footage by law for 90 days, except for there's one camera that shoots upon our security cabinet, which only a few people in a company can have access to it. Because OLCC wants to make sure nobody's getting in there and manipulating it. So that footage, we also keep for 90 days, but that has to be stored by a third neutral party off-site. So I don't even get to store that footage. I mean, we store it, but a third neutral, if somebody showed up and said, well, I want to see your footage from the neutral party, we have to be able to show that to them so they can make sure that nobody got in there to that security cabinet, which is all locked up, or closet, whatever, and manipulated any footage. Of course, everybody's carded the moment they walk through the door. Their OLCC conducts mandatory minor stings. At Red Barn, I have a consulting firm that does mandatory minor stings at each dispensary twice a year, unknown to anybody except me, advance. I'd also like to just say, you know, there's dispensaries and there's dispensaries. I like to think we're in this column. We actually drug test our employees. We don't consider cannabis, obviously, a drug, but we don't want the other stuff. So there's a lot of safety that's considered. Vince sitting right here runs my security program. We have
right now, in a single wide in Myrtle Creek, next to my headquarters, there's a gentleman sitting there watching a big row of flat screen TVs with more than 300 cameras, probably, not 300, 250-ish, sitting there staring at cameras, watching our employees. We're making sure that everybody gets off the premises safe at night. Our security trailer is one of the most visited locations by OSP, MCPD. They're not coming because of our problems. They're coming to solve community problems. And because we've got so many cameras throughout the county, they're always coming there or calling me, Todd, can we come to the security trailer and we get some footage? Of course you can. Come anytime you want. So anyway, we're quite proud of that. So I'd like to bring that up and mention. So we take the safety thing very, very seriously.
That's the information we have. Thank you, Mr. Thies. We put together what we can in terms of anticipated revenues and impacts on the community and how the program would look in its entirety, provided, you know, just about as bit of data as we can without going out to do a professional study. The only thing left from a staff perspective to recommend is for you to entertain a public hearing with a resolution at your next meeting. Would need a consensus on that.
Can I ask one more question? How do you determine the percentage of tetrahydrocannabinol? How do you determine the percentage on that?
Through licensed Oregon State Labs. And so we cannot purchase anything that has not been tested. And I gotta tell you, everything goes through a program that's called Metric, M-E-T-R-C, and I forget what that stands for, but all cannabis is tracked from the time it's a seedling up until the consumer takes it. Of course, it's not tracked who comes in and purchases it. The only thing we're concerned about at that stage is that it meets the THC requirements, that it meets the Oregon State guidelines for mold and any other icky stuff, that it meets the Oregon State guidelines for pesticides and herbicide and all that, that it meets all the guidelines 100%. And this metric system, I gotta tell you, it's kind of brutal. We get notifications 10 times a week saying, hey, we need to know more about this product, or hey, this company sold this product and pull that off your shelf immediately. Now, I will say this, 99.9% of the time, the product goes right back on the shelf. It's just, it's a lot to keep track of the whole system, but it's diligent. It is very robust, and it's amazing to me. Like when I first got into the business, like I was every day, I was like freaked out, you know, like but then I came to appreciate it and realize that okay, the system's actually working, and usually it's not an issue. It's just somebody, it's a typo, or it's a whatever. It's something very, very simple, typically, and so that product's able to go back out. But I'm impressed at how much they actually catch and how well it's observed.
It's impressive. You only get them from certified dealers.
Correct.
That's to be through
the system. Nothing from the Golden Triangle.
No, sir. No, not at all. I'm not having it. Another thing I might just throw out for the crowd real quick is that a lot of communities and cities is letting the state collect 3%, and I don't know what they charge for a handling fee, but I know if I was city admin, I would say, let's just collect it ourselves.
I think we did.
You guys all have the capability of shutting us down if
we get behind, and why let the state take an extra piece of that pie that you guys could keep in your own pocket?
And, you know, and for as much as everybody is kind of leery, you know, this is something that the city needs. Not because of anything other than we need the money. We need the money. We need business to come into town to give us the money to be able to do the things that we want to do. And this is an opportunity that we have left on the table for a long time. We have an opportunity to have something come in. You were saying we were short 145. This could bring in 125. Look at the difference this would make. I mean, it's not that it's not out there. It's not that it's not anywhere. It's out there. And I want Mrs. Jones, who's got cancer, to be able to come into her community and not have to drive somewhere else to get it, to be able to get something to help her feel better at the last stages of whatever she's going through. And, you know, it's an opportunity to help everybody around. It's not... We've got enough buffers, we've got enough zones to make it so that it's not going to infect any schools, it's not going to affect any daycares, it's not going to be around any churches. It's a very nice establishment. I mean, if you've ever seen any of his establishments, you don't know what they are.
Yeah. I went in and visited one because I'd never been in.
Yeah.
And I went into one of yours, and I went into some other ones to see what it was. I was amazed.
Yes.
It wasn't at all what I thought it was.
Thank you.
And you don't know what it is from the outside. It's not something that's got a big green leaf that says, come in here. It's not. It's something that everybody has. They have a barn in their yard, out in their field. You know, it's a barn.
Thomas mentioned conditional use permits. As big a pain as they are, we have been through. I'm licensed in Myrtle Point, Bandon. They both require CUPs, Myrtle Creek. I've got two licenses there. Well, in other cannabis business, every one of them require a CUP. Where else?
Actually, even though we didn't go there.
Yeah. So anyway, the CUP process is a good way to move the ball forward with some assurances that Planning Commission and City Council gets more input on location, what things
right.
see and feel and smell like. Reed Sport, the reason this triggered Mayor was Reed Sport has an ordinance that says you can't have a marijuana leaf on your sign. And
good.
And for as liberal as Reed Sport was initially not having any buffer strips, and they were sorry for that, that was one thing they didn't want was cannabis leaf on a sign. And so, like I say, it's really kind of open-ended as to what sort of rules and regulations that you guys would like to put in.
Well, I think that's what the planning department and what administration would do, and the state has already done. I think we have the opportunity. I know the community has voted that they want the money, and I think we have the opportunity to have that happen. But so what is it you need from?
A motion to place a resolution on the March 3rd agenda for the allowance and the permits of recreational marijuana dispensaries.
Do I have a motion?
If I could say that as nicely as you did, yes, I made the motion.
And a second?
Mayor, can I say something?
Please.
I was actually surprised that no one's asked me at the council what I thought about this.
Oh.
And I kind of want to tell you what I think.
Okay.
I think that it's more common now than it was when we had our committee together.
Mm-hmm.
And we argued maybe a little bit more against it. Again, it's been against the grain for 30 years of my career, right? Mm-hmm. All drugs have been. But I also understand that things are changing and times change. That being said, You guys are Red Barn? Mm-hmm. Red Barn? Yes, sir. I have talked to the chiefs at the other locations and other jurisdictions around the state and in our local area, and they are very professional in what they do. They look at it as a business, and if we are going to have one in our city, that's the one I would recommend. That's all I have.
Thank you for that very much.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. Again, I have a first. Do I have a second?
Look, they're steadfast down there. Could we just shorter
We could.
That's what this is
that's
for.
That's what this is for.
It's a public hearing along with a resolution that's associated with
it. Just for a public hearing.
That's what this is for.
And a resolution.
Just a public hearing.
Can we get an individual vote on this by chance when you take your vote as a council?
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'll say aye under condition of public hearing only.
Well, they already did.
Yeah, I know that. I just
okay.
So I'm sure it's in the record.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? You're not going to vote?
I said aye.
Oh, okay.
I heard it down here.
Okay. I'm sorry I didn't hear it.
Thank you, Mayor.
Step number one.
Thank you.
Okay. New business. Workshops. Are there any workshops coming up?
None, Your Honor, at this time.
Okay. And now, resolution 25-1166. Would you please read that, Ms. Sardi?
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Resolution number 25-1166. A resolution of the City of Winston, Oregon City Council authorizing the city manager to enter into an agreement with F&W Floor Covering for the replacement of the Community Center Grand Room Carpet for an amount not to exceed $25,798, which includes a 10% contingency.
$25,000.
Staff report. Mayor, Council, members of the audience, that was pretty informative, I have to say, just talking about the Red Barn thing. Mm-hmm. This is actually the carpet and the vinyl flooring that's in the catering kitchen that rolls through. It'll proceed on the west wall about 4 feet. And one of the things that we've dealt with over the years, as council's aware of, is when we have the food thing set up. So, the food and the stains of the carpets, and we'll have that. So part of that is about a 4 foot, and then the catering kitchen will roll around with the vinyl. And then the 24x24 squares. The estimate is for the $23,453. We recommended that 10% for a total of $25,798. It's a little over $2,000. It's not much. You don't really know if you get in there and pull that stuff up. So we're hoping everything's good underneath that concrete, but it's going to be old.
It's got a lot of food in it.
So.
I have a question. How many people was contacted in this $25,798. Was that a high bid, low bid?
That was the lowest one. They averaged about $1,200 to $1,500.
Was it?
Yeah. So that this was the lowest one. The other one, it was fairly close. We were actually, it was a little higher, but their product that we could have got a good deal on. But it's discontinued, and we didn't have no warranty with it.
No.
So we elected to. So anyway, that's where we're at with F&W. And then just the background, just real quickly, on the 24-25 budget, we had ARPA funds that were left over, ARPA funds that were basically put over to the community center. So we're using that ARPA funds out of there. After we do the flooring, if council approves that, we'll have about $9,000 left to spend out of that ARPA funds that we have to spend this before July 1st. And the next thing, what we'd probably do is a projector. You can't see the thing up there when it's on. It's a struggle for anybody who uses it. This is just a little sidebar. So just for council. But anyway, that was that. Just for council approval for the for the F&W. Just a side note, they do require half down of 11,726 prior. So we'll have to get them a check if council okays this one. Before they can even place the order, we have a conversation with them. They just, it's a lot of money.
Everybody wants money first.
So that's my staff report.
Okay, thank you, Andy. Are there any comments from the public, from the audience? Everybody's good on the carpet. Cool. Council action. Do I have a motion to accept resolution 25-1166?
I make a motion to accept resolution 25-1166.
Okay, second?
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Right on. Thank you. And so you'll cut a check for them to get that ordered?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we'll get the ball rolling.
Okay, the next one is resolution 25-1167, Douglas County IGA lead change. Ms. Sardi.
Thank you, Mayor. Resolution number 25-1167. A resolution of the City of Winston, Oregon City Council authorizing the City Manager to enter into the fifth extension of the Douglas County Leachate Agreement number 3000175.
Oh, thank you. Staff report, Mr. Chris.
Yes, so we've been treating leachate since 2010. Mm-hmm. We've increased the amount over the years, part of it's just from practices that are going up there. They have built a treatment facility that they just brought online, so they're still kind of going through the growing pains of figuring it out. So this is just an extension of the agreement. I think the plan is eventually for them, without speaking for them, that they'd like to discharge, mm-hmm. apply for a discharge permit. We would be kind of a contingency to that. That's the direction I want to head. So
is that a good thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it does provide revenue, yeah. But throughout the years, we've asked the plant to do something it wasn't designed to do. And we've tried really hard to maintain that, but it just got to a point where we couldn't anymore. So
this is the plant that they built across from Ingram?
No, this is the plant they built up at the landfill itself.
Oh, up at the landfill. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Mayor, if I may, just yes, so everyone please. Understands what leachate is, out at the transfer site, it rains on garbage, and that liquid goes down to the bottom. It's liquid garbage. It's nasty stuff. It's got to be brought somewhere and treated. Yeah. The county brings it to the wastewater plant, and since it's nasty stuff, it has to be gradually discharged into the plant. They built their own facility to make it very, very diluted, but they still have to bring it to us. So we have an agreement. We charge them so much, and we continue to treat it for them, and this is the fifth extension of that, just so everyone understands that what that is.
That's a wonderful summer smell you get when you drive by.
So, Chris, I know we've been talking about this for several years. Is there a chance? I mean, we never know for sure. Eventually, they're going to not bring anything at all, right?
That is what they're shooting for.
Yeah, but it's not happening this year, you don't think?
No. Yeah. No. And at this point, since it is just an extension, we're still charging them the same amount for treated or raw.
Yeah.
It's just, and a lot of it's just because of the unknown of their treatment facility as they try to bring it online.
Kill
our bugs No. No, after that, there were a bunch of safety protocols put in place to prevent that. So.
Okay, any other questions? Comments from the audience? Council action. Do I have a motion to accept resolution 25-1167?
I move we adopt resolution 25-1167.
Okay. And a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Perfect. It passes. Non-agenda items from the council. Upcoming agenda items. Good to the order. You guys have your check of copy. I need to check out the deck.
Announcements. You are a February 20th. Can we make this at 5:10 so I have time to drive over here after work?
I would like a second that.
Yeah. What time do you get off work?
5.
Where do you work?
Roseburg.
So you need more than 10 minutes.
I can take off early, but if we can push it back, it'd be really
good. We can make it at 5:15. Give you guys plenty of time.
That'd be perfect.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Just
5:15.
Some of us.
And they get here.
City Council meeting March 3rd at 7, right here. Park Board meeting March 11th at 4 at City Hall. And Economic Development March 12th at noon at City Hall. Executive session, do we have one?
None, Your Honor.
Thank you, everybody, very, very much. We're adjourned.
Meeting adjourned 8:30.